everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. I am your host, Dougie Almeida, and today is a sporting event, bit of a sports show for you kiddies out there. I'm joined today by my old coach. I don't mean old like he's old. Mr. Thomas Rongen is here. TR is with us today.
And Dougie, what's up?
Thanks, buddy. And ESPN commentator, radio personality, Dave Lamont is joining us today.
It is great to be with both of you guys.
It is. And you know what? It's great to have you guys because, A, TR, Dave only knows me as a chubby, funny guy. Mm-hmm. And you know me a little different. So
absolutely. You are this thin, good-looking, highly athletic, probably one of the best goalkeepers I've ever coached. Let me just premise by saying that, Doug. Absolutely right.
See? Wow, I didn't, that's right, but you never coach goalies. You only coach forwards. but I appreciate that.
No, but looking over my shoulder when you were working out, you look good. You look really, you were 180, you were 6'3", you got a little smaller, I don't know why, and you were this good-looking guy on the road, by the way. We pulled some chicks. It was really good. I enjoyed it, Doug, really. And you made a save occasionally, also important.
Is that on or off the field where he made the saves, Thomas?
Both.
Yeah. And it was always great, as I don't know if they're allowed to do that now. You would know this, Dave Lamont, if whether coaches are allowed to go and hang after the games at the bars, and travel.
Well,
it's
not the 1970s Fort Lauderdale Strikers, if that's what you mean.
Yeah.
When the coaches would get there before the players. No, you know what? It's not. And in this era where everybody has one of these and is willing to do whatever it takes to embarrass somebody, no, I think there's a lot of separation now between coaches and players, even privately.
Yeah. And it's got to be there. That is a fine line, right? The coach cannot be a friend, but you could. I mean, what's the trick to being a good coach, Thomas?
There is really not a trick, I think. It's one meal a day behind bars. That would have been if there were phones back then, Dougie, but we're both doing well, quite frankly. So it was just staying out of trouble. No, I mean, I was very fortunate to – I was born and raised in the Netherlands, so I came through the Clockwork Orange – Dutch coaching philosophy. Was very fortunate to be coached by one of the great legends in the game, Rinus Michels, when I came to the United States in 1979. One of my teammates for a few years was Johan Cruyff. So I'm steeped in those principles of creativity, leading through democracy, allowing players to flourish. I think I was pretty good at that. And I was decent in X's and O's as well. At the end of the day, I harbored, I think, a wholesome environment as much as I could, both in high school, college, and later, obviously, the professional level.
Yeah, because it was a big difference when you came and coached from when we had our previous coaches.
Don't go there.
No, I'm just saying it was just a different, you could tell, because when I first went to college, I went to Flagler College and coached Bobby Mullins.
Big mistake.
Yes, it was.
And how's Bobby Mullen doing, by the way?
I haven't spoke to him in a while, but
good friend of mine, by the way. Bobby is good. Didn't work out for you, all right?
No, enough. But he liked tall goalies, and I'm not a tall goalie, so I should have known. He sat my brother years before when my brother was an amazing goalie, even shorter than I. But the problem was the preseason, because preseason's August. And you'd have to get ready. I was always a goalie, so I wasn't a field player, like always running miles and miles. So I would agonize thinking I'd have to get ready for these three practices a day that start at 7 a.m. and then 12 and then 4 or 5. And you don't see a ball for 2 weeks. You're at a soccer practice and training, but it's all conditioned. Mullen's conditioned. He was, two weeks. Nope. You got to see the ball in the second week, but it was to run to it. You got to run to it and touch it and then run back. Conditioning. Then when we went to Nova, there was no conditioning. 12 Cooper test, and that was it.
Correct. There you go. Let's roll the ball out there, baby. Let's play.
One of the most recent sports moments I thought was very stunning, and Dave, you can back me up on this, was the Gonzaga last minute, just under a half court shot that got him to the finals.
He shot it like he knew what he was doing. You know, it looked a little bit like a Steph Curry shot. I'm sure you guys have seen highlights or maybe watched an occasional game where Curry just pulls up from about 35 feet and just shoots a normal jump shot and then looks at it like, well, I expect that to go in. And that was kind of what the vibe I got from the way he shot it. Now, he had nothing to lose. If he misses, they still play ball. They don't lose the game. But it was under the circumstances with as great a game as that was, and that really was easily one of the best games I've watched, college or NBA, in a long time. To do that just made it all memorable. They just didn't have anything left last night against a very, very good team.
Yeah, Baylor, unbelievable team. I don't know if you caught that, Thomas, but that guy from Gonzaga hitting that just under half-court shot.
I actually did the radio for Dutch, I did. And it was, Jalen Scott, Jalen's invitation, Golden Lenya, Mark Few, UCLA, into Gonzaga, the Bulldogs, ongelooflijk, ongelooflijk, Christian Leitner, oh, James Duck, yeah. That's what I did for the Dutch radio, it's unbelievable.
Ook van Leitner, yeah.
Maybe better than the Leitner shot.
I got to remember, Ook van Leitner, Ook van Leitner, I don't know.
Yeah, Ook van Leitner.
I probably said something, offended somebody in Holland.
Probably
did. The whole country, by the way.
They're coming after me.
Well, cancel Dougie's tour there.
Exactly. Correct.
So much for the Dougie Dangerous tour in Holland.
Nothing in downtown Amsterdam for Dougie.
I think about moments like that. And as a goalkeeper, the only time I ever heard the cherub sing was when I would save a penalty kick. You know, as a goalkeeper, when you save a penalty kick, there is no better high because no one expects you to save it, you know. And you when you save it, everything's in slow motion. If you can capture one moment in your playing history, you ever have one of those moments, like just spectacular winning moment?
As a player?
Yeah.
Yeah, I scored with 4 seconds left in the second overtime, a tying goal against the Los Angeles Aztecs in 1980 of an assist or a cross of Johan Cruyff. And I savor that till this moment, obviously, that I was able to score a goal. It was a header. That was pretty much the few things I was pretty good at. It was leaping and getting above people and getting something at goal. But with the assist of the number 14, one of the best players ever to walk the face of the earth, that stayed with me. We won that game eventually in penalties too. We lost 1980, we lost against, maybe the Cosmos. It ended up being the Cosmos and the Fort Lauderdale Strikers actually went to the finals. But that was a first round playoff game that I still remember to this day.
Absolutely. Now, going to someone who is not able to lift off the ground as effortlessly as Thomas. Not me either. I actually jumped up to hang because I got back problems at the gym I only needed to, as Bobby once told me, you couldn't even slip a magazine under your feet.
Yep.
And you jump. He's a mean bat. But, I felt like I was jumping up to try to jump onto the roof, but I've gotten used to it. So, any sports?
If I'm correct, though, Dave Lamont, your son is a pretty good leaper. Am I correct?
Actually, no. They're big and tall, which really helps. The younger one can jump higher than the older one. The older one, who's now actually just moved over to Texas as a graduate assistant to Chris Beard, just left Texas Tech in the last
awesome.
Week.
I know he was a hoops guy, yeah.
Yeah, he's 6'10", but he was another guy that just was tall but really couldn't jump. The other one, who's in the transfer portal right now, can jump at 6'8". But it's funny you say that, Dougie. It was kind of a joke. I think he dunked in his college career, and he played every game in college. He didn't miss a game, 130 straight games, or 100. I think it's 130 straight games. I think he dunked like twice in 130 games. That's just he was blessed with my handsomeness, but also with my legs.
Listen, your handsomeness is going to help him out in his later life. Believe me, Dave. Yeah.
Much further than much more than the legs. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Although a nice pair of legs and men is not bad, Dougie. Let's be real honest.
That was my nickname in college, was legs.
See?
Really?
Yeah, and Doug can relate. Yeah. Dougie can relate to tall, lanky legs as well.
Yeah, not me. I mean, I'm 5'9", you know. I did win Mr. Legs in high school, though.
You did? And you won a wet T-shirt contest as well? Unbelievable.
That was last weekend, by the way. I stopped in Daytona, collected an extra $150.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
I figured you got to use them while you got them. But that was good. And then, of course, big game on Sunday. Let's talk a little bit about this Major League Baseball, because everybody's asking me aspect, and I don't like to talk about it, but Major League Baseball pulling out of the All-Star game out of Atlanta. And without getting into the politics of it, because there's two sides of the story. If you read the law that was passed, some people say it really isn't restricting. Other people said it's just trying to tighten things up a little bit. But nevertheless, is baseball, is this something you think is good for the sport?
I'll start. I think if you go by the no publicity is bad publicity, or bad no publicity is bad publicity. Any publicity is good publicity. I'm sorry. That's what I was trying to say. It brings attention to the game, and it might bring a few extra eyeballs when they play the game in Denver. Baseball has the right to do this kind of thing. They, you know, they, you can move things around in response. I think they tried to read the tea leaves on this and try to figure out where people were landing outside, not just in Atlanta, although that's really the market you should be most careful about. Is that's the market you're taking something out of, the people were looking forward to going to. But I wondered if they just gauged the country's interest and thought, you know what, we're going to try to land on what we think is the right side, and we'll deal with the consequences. And I think eventually, like all of this other stuff, it'll blow over.
Yeah.
And it may even bring a few more people to watch the game, which baseball does need an improvement in national ratings. It's become a regional sport.
That's a great point, Dave. I don't think anybody cares about baseball anymore. The only reason why I like it is because we see more home runs, because it's high altitude. Shit. Well, I watched the home run derby. That's about it. But who really cares?
That's going to be something at Coors Field. The home run derby there is going to be.
There you go. Yeah. And there won't be anybody left in Atlanta for Georgia for Dougie to go to in a year. So it's tough times.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, because you look at the sport, like we remember, I remember the biggest I saw any sport ticket was when major hockey, the NHL, had a strike years ago. And they were big. I mean, this is right after, I think, the Panthers had won. And so Florida was it. So there was a lot of new expansion teams in it. And then they went on strike, and that was it. You couldn't even watch them on, like, Channel 195 for a while. But they were, you know, they had regular games, and that really destroyed that league, didn't it?
The NHL?
Yeah.
I don't think it's destroyed. I think, much like baseball, it's a regional phenomenon. Certain parts of the country are obsessed with hockey, as they are with baseball. You go to the Northeast, for example, you go into Boston or New York or Philly or Pittsburgh. Yeah. They love hockey. Yeah. Maybe even some of the, but in the Sun Belt, maybe not so much. And same with baseball. There's certain cities and certain areas that are obsessed with baseball. And then there are others who kind of take it or leave it. And I think in Florida, we are a take it or leave it state and on just about everything except maybe the NFL. But otherwise, if your team is winning, Floridians are interested. But otherwise, no. What else is there to do?
There you go.
Yeah.
Soccer is the game. Kids are playing it. You know, youth-wise, it's been huge. Yeah, you've definitely seen a greater level of coaching, right, Thomas, in the leagues, in the youth leagues, which is a big part of the sport for this country.
Yeah, sure. We're now in our, 26th, 27th year of Major League Soccer. We're going close to 30 teams. The pandemic has been tough, but it was a league that continued to rise and become better from a quality standpoint, from an attendance standpoint, from a television standpoint, sponsorship standpoint as well. The academies underneath those professional teams have helped. Those continue to make the growth of youth soccer on all levels better, including youth coaching, which I think is important. And as you've seen the last 5-6 years, we have players starting next to Ronaldo at Juventus. Right. We have Serginho Dest assisting Lionel Messi. We've seen Christian Pulisic maybe probably start tomorrow for Chelsea in the Champions League. We've seen at RB Leipzig. We see all these phenomena now coming through between ages of 17, 18, and 22 that are pretty darn good for our team. Musa, the place for Valencia. I mean, a decade ago, I couldn't mention one guy at that age playing that level. So more and more young Americans are leaving, which means that we've done a better job in terms of development and are playing not just with some clubs, with some of the biggest clubs in the world. Now we're talking Juventus, Barcelona, Chelsea, you know, even a Canadian at Bayern Munich, and an American, Richards, right, who's played some games at Bayern Munich. Josh Sargent starting every game for Werder Bremen. Gio Reyna coming in today against Manchester City and looking like he belonged at 18 years old for Borussia Dortmund. So tremendous strides we've made. And in 2026, when we host the World Cup, which is another the biggest sporting event in the world, which continued to help MLS and soccer in this country, we might be able to make a run at the Final Four.
Well, hi, my name is Dave. First time caller, long time listener. I'd like to ask Mr. Rongen why the Americans suck at international soccer, only the men, since the women are great. I'll take my answer off the air, please.
You're referring to the failure again of 2018 and three consecutive Olympics, Dave, which is hard to swallow, obviously. I was actually part of the coaching staff in 2004 when we didn't make it to the Olympics in the same venue in Mexico in a one-off game. But it was against Mexico at home in front of 80,000 people. We've lost now against Canada and Honduras twice. In our region, we should be with Mexico, the dominant teams, even in an age group, even with the fact that a better players were not released, including all the names I just mentioned, who are all Olympic age eligible. The women, it's a senior team. It's over 23, you know, so it's a little bit different. As much as the women deserve to get equal pay, that's besides the point. But yeah, that's, you take away another really opportunity of development for these players. They're going to the Olympics under pressure, having to perform, going through the group stages, et cetera, all the things that come with it.
Yeah. He just got slide tackled.
Yeah, I did. I mean, and by the way, slide tackled, two-footed by Dave's son. Dave's son just can fly around the corner.
Well, those are size 15s. We could never just run down to the Dick's Sporting Goods or the old Sports Authority and run to the sneaker aisle. We had to always order.
Good coaching, Dave, because we're studs up at size 15 with both feet.
You know what? They got their footwork from playing soccer when they were smaller, and they were always the biggest kids out there. And they had surprisingly good feet. The older one, the biggest one, had surprisingly good. The younger one just ran you over. And it used to piss people off in the stands because he was clearly bigger than everybody else. And he didn't care. There's the ball. I'm going to go get it. And if you have, you know, if little Egbert's in the way, little Egbert's going to eat dirt, and I'm going to go get the ball.
There's been a few guys in the NBA, actually, who said that soccer really is a sport that they all should play, if basketball players, because of the footwork. There's some great examples, in particular from African players that played soccer, came to the United States, were big-time NBA players. And that's right.
Hakeem Olajuwon, nobody had better footwork than that cat, and he played soccer in his native land in Africa. Absolutely.
Yeah.
By the way, I got a word from I apologize to our listeners. The video is very choppy because I was wondering why we haven't got it. So I'm going to leave it to you guys. I got audio done for the podcast. You want to reload it, or you guys want to just do the audio?
Whatever you think is best. I'm good either way.
What do you think, Thomas?
I'm good either way, too. I'll leave it up to you and your cohort.
What does Invisible Chris think?
Chris, were you going to reload it?
It's basically the video came out real choppy. The audio's bad. So if we relaunched it, you'd probably be going back over some of the stuff you were talking about before. Otherwise, you can keep going, and the audio's great, but the video's going to be real choppy and whatnot.
All right. So
two options there.
I don't want to have to start all over. We went 25 minutes, right? You guys.
I shut my what, dude?
Yeah, yeah.
Again?
Yeah. It's like
you need a towel.
All right. I'm mopping, Dave. I'm mopping like a madman.
All right. So, Chris, the recording isn't even coming out well. So we'll just have audio on this one then.
Yeah, the audio is good on my end, but the recording's choppy too. It's just something with the encoding.
All right.
So let's do the recording.
Let's just.
I was trying to get the attention 2 minutes in to say, hey, let's just restart this thing, but it got
too hot. All right, don't worry about it. We'll just go for the podcast then.
All righty.
So, that's interesting. All right. So which brings me to the what you mentioned, you know, women's sports, right? The women's, and again, you're right. They actually are you want, when I watch women's soccer, there's just this, just, I don't know how to say this. There's just this, there's no selfishness. You know, it's like they're almost looking to pass the ball, as opposed to, you don't see it as much as the individual trying to really get through there and dribble through people.
The other thing, and I'd love to hear what Thomas has to say about this, that I love about the women's game is they just play. They get knocked down, they get up. There's no display. There's no if somebody lays on the ground for more than 10 seconds, that player's actually hurt. I can remember, was it Thomas, the woman from Japan, who was getting her head glued on the pitch because she had a collision, and they literally glued her head shut so she could play. There's a physical and mental toughness there that is really remarkable, and a sportsmanship and professionalism about the way they play. I think one of the things that hurts soccer in the eyes of the average American sports fan, not the passionate soccer fan, is that they see a guy flop or overact about when they gets taken down and trying to influence the official. And a lot of people don't like that. And very rarely will you ever see a woman professional do that.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think maybe LeBron, doesn't he own part of Arsenal or
Liverpool?
Liverpool, right. I think he wants too many because he's a flopper. I think he got.
Oh, he's a drama queen. There's no question about it. He's a ridiculous player, but yes, he is a dramatic person on the court.
It does irk me, even as a longtime soccer fan and player, when I see those players, falling over nothing. Right? I mean, Tara, that's that. I mean, for a while there, FIFA was trying to penalize it, but it still continued.
Yeah, and Neymar comes to mind, obviously, in particular for Brazil, the last World Cup flopping, which continues now with PSG, gets red cards. It's a different kind of approach. They feel like they're bigger than the game, whereas the women, as Dave said so correctly, I called some of the professional games last year when they were in the bubble in Real Salt. It was a real great experience in terms of how open the coaches were prior to games to give you information, to the way the game was being played. So wholesome, hard, but tough and technically and tactically sound. And I think the last World Cup put him on the map. All of a sudden, this league is taking off. It's expanding. CBS, obviously, which I'm part of, has done a great job in signing him up for a few years. There's more sponsorship. There's more interest in the women's game. And for some of the reasons that Dave, you and I just mentioned.
Yeah,
absolutely. Which gets us into the sport. Now, I know there's a lot of talk about transgender in sports, and more particularly transgender men participating in women's sports. Now, Thomas, when you Samoa, right, that you have there's a transgender, but I believe it's a man that identifies as a woman, right, that played on the men's national team. So it's generally technically, excuse me, I don't want to be insensitive, but biologically a man, but as a gender feels female and a very attractive, very attractive. I saw the photo you posted on Instagram, but she plays in the men's sport, which is different than a man, a biological man who identifies as a woman playing in women's sports. I look at that, and I mean, to me, there's a big difference. Two stories. There's transgender people. Everybody makes their own decisions in life, but. For a biological male to compete in female sports, there's still a major debate about it, Dave. I think about people wanting to play their sport, but I also think about the women in that are competing in that sport, and kind of like.
Well, the first example, because I was thinking about this today, the first example that comes to my mind goes way back in the 70s, I believe it was, when Dr. Renee Richards, who was born Richard Raskin, went through the surgery. This is a long time ago now, before this was ever really the topic that is much more talked about today, and then played professional tennis on the women's tour, but was not extremely successful and ended up retiring after a few years and probably is now retired as an eye doctor in Manhattan. Didn't really have an impact athletically. So I don't know if there's a big advantage. I can't think of any other prominent examples at the moment. I mean, if you're willing to go through the emotional and physical trauma that I'm assuming goes on when you have a gender reassignment, I don't know what, is there a built-in advantage? Is there proof that somebody who's done this has an advantage? I just don't know.
I don't know either. I'm very confused about this and conflicted, obviously. I'd seen it the other way around, so there was not really a huge advantage in a fafapina, they call that in the Polynesian culture, which is a third gender, and correctly so, a male that identifies as a female that has undergone now after the World Cup qualifying games, which was in 2012, has gone through the procedure that Dave just talked about. So it's hard. Yeah, I can't see any real proof or hard data that it would be an advantage, a disadvantage. It's a hard subject. It certainly is. Being from the Netherlands and having an open mind, I know where I stand if I'm being pushed to make a decision, but it's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, you feel. I mean, and then, like I said, you feel for the athletes that are competing with them, and like there's an MMA fighter who's a male that identifies as a woman that's been very strong. I mean, when you get in something like tennis, you know, I mean, tennis isn't really physical. Like nowadays, you can't say that with some of the tennis players we're seeing. But in the old days back then, I mean, the tennis players weren't the.
No. I mean, the first person I can remember that really put herself in this case through any kind of major fitness regimen was Martina Navratilova the 80s, I think it was. And, you know, there were books written about what she did and nutrition and all the workouts, and she benefited greatly from it. She went from being overweight and losing matches because she would tire to becoming one of the one of the five greatest women players of all time. Easily.
It was always amazing to watch her and Chrissy Evert. Chrissy was like the Barbie doll kind of tennis player, and Navratilova was this specimen, you know, that resembled a man. She was a physical attribute, very strong, and a fantastic player for it. Now that's all changed. Well, you know, with that being said, let me ask you guys this. We're all different sports. Who do you think, which professional sports has the best athletes? Who's the most all-around best athlete? Is it a soccer player? Is it a football player? Who do you think has the most overall best athlete?
I think it's our cricket players.
Yeah.
Because cricket players sometimes have to play five straight days. Talk about conditioning, you know, to start with. And they got to hit these three wooden sticks, which is, I know about sticks, not easy. You got a crowd that sits on chairs that brings alcohol. So there's a lot of, distractions as well. It's just, I tell you. Talking about mental strength and fortitude, athletics. I go with the cricket players being the goats of sports.
Jeez, yeah, I
was going to come up with a normal answer. I don't know what to do now. I would have to go with the basketball, because if we're talking about athletics, what's the most basic athletic moves? Running, jumping, agility, and footwork. And that's required to play basketball at a high level. I don't mean the guys that I used to play against in the park 35 years ago, and we would drink beers afterwards at 12 o'clock on a Sunday. I mean the level that we watch on TV, conditioning, all of that stuff.
Because when you think about it, you've seen fat professional baseball players.
Yeah, mainly pitchers, but yeah. Football players, some of them just can't help it.
The linemen.
When you're 300-plus-pound lineman, it's very difficult to look 300 pounds and be Mr. America.
I think the last time we had a fat guy on the basketball court was Big Baby, right? Didn't he play for the Celtics?
Yes.
Yeah, he was a chubber guy.
Yeah.
Well, on a serious note, I agree with Dave. It's probably basketball and soccer. You mentioned just all the things that you also see in soccer. I might put soccer ahead of basketball because eye-foot coordination, I think, is harder than eye-hand coordination. That's all the sports we play throughout the world, be it baseball, be it basketball, be it tennis, be it hockey. So, but they both have to be in great shape. Footwork is essential. We jump in headers, by the way, so we use different parts of our body as well. So I think that soccer is in there. If you talk about individuals, it's going to be like the what are these guys that do 12 different things?
Decathlons.
Yeah.
Decathlon.
Wow. Yeah, these guys, insane. Men and women, must be unbelievable. Yeah. But as a team sport, I agree with Dave, probably basketball and soccer.
I agree. Let's see. All right, this is going to be interesting. Which professional league has the worst officiating? And while we're on that, I'm going to ask you guys, because I had a record going because I was a season ticket holder for the Miami Heat for over 15 years, right around Shaq through the season after LeBron. I was trying to tabulate a record of how many times I could scream my heckling to a referee. Do you guys have a go-to heckle to a referee? Do you have something you like when you know the ref ump?
You know what? We have different perspectives on this. Let's ask the guy who's coached first and then ask the guy who's parented. And I think you might get similar answers but different approaches. So I'd like to hear from Thomas on that.
Yeah. I mean, what was the question? Is it a sport or the country or the what the referees
are? Which sport? The basically professional soccer referee.
I think it's soccer because if it's international. I mean, you go down in qualifying in CONCACAF, you play away at Honduras. I'm telling you, the refereeing in Honduras is different than in MLS. You go to Eastern Europe, it will be different. You look at the World Cup qualifying games right now. There is no VAR and no goal line technology. You see Ronaldo taking off his armband because, in fact, they lost 2 points due to a referee mistake, a human mistake that VAR might have helped with, although VAR hasn't been the solution either. So I think it's really, in general, international soccer because you go from country to country and the game gets interpreted differently. The game is played differently. In England, due to the rain, there's more slide tackling during the winter. Whereas you go to California, you just take the state of California, where it rarely rains, there is not any tackling. It's more technical football. So the style influences a referee and the referees where he comes from. I can even see the referee in the Northeast, which are tougher guys, allow plays to continue. Whereas you go down to South Florida, where they're more protective of the technical players. So it's a very interesting kind of thing. I don't have a particular I would always try to get in the fourth official's ear, knowing that after I got fined a few times and I got a red card once in my coaching career in MLS, that it really doesn't behoove you and doesn't really work that way, trying to reach out to a referee across the field with some insane language. So I changed my course a little bit to try to use it as a tactical ploy to how can I find a way to get the referees on my side. And sometimes it's more positive reinforcement than negative reinforcement.
Yeah, good call.
You know, soccer, one of the things I'm involved with the United Soccer League. I'll announce maybe like half a dozen or 10 games a year. And the one thing that drives me nuts is it seems that the officials have two sets of rules, first half, second half. First half, it seems like you could bring an axe out there and take a guy's ankle off, and you might get a free kick out of it. And all of a sudden, in the second half, out comes a yellow card. It's almost as if the official is like a parent, and he's tired of you. And at first, he just tells you to go to your room, and now he's grounding you. And it's just like, to me, it ought to be the same all the time. It should be a foul in minute 5 and a foul in minute 87. And I'm always fascinated by, and we've talked about it, with guys who are former players like Thomas, and Thomas and I have done some games together. It drives me nuts that it seems like they just turn it on in the second half. Oh, now it's a yellow card. Before, I only said you can't do it. And I realize the players bear some responsibility because if the referee has warned them, hey, knock it off, and they do it again, then they get banged with a card. And I'm okay with that. But I don't understand why some things carry more weight later in the game and then otherwise. And in outside of soccer, you mentioned the NBA, Dougie, and I hate to call them out on it, but that and the NFL, because it's so damn arbitrary. How many times have you watched a football game and you say, well, that's a hold, and nothing gets called? And you see the official right there. And officials in football have zones they look at, not necessarily players. So if Thomas is running a pass pattern and some receiver or some defensive back bumps him and it looks like it's a penalty and there's an official standing there, that official's not looking at Thomas. That person's looking at that area. Hmm. So it's somebody else's call. Instead of, oh, that happened right in front of me, I have to throw a flag. And same with the NBA. When is it a foul? When is it not a foul?
What was that game? Was it in the playoffs? Who went to the Super Bowl the year or two ago where they just blew the call?
Rams Saints. Yeah. There was a blatant pass interference call. Yeah. And it went against the Saints. They ended up not winning. And we ended up with the Patriots beating the Rams in the Super Bowl.
And you're right about the NFL because usually it's almost like the NFL is writing the rule book as the game is going. You know, because it's sometimes they even go to the professionals, like, what do you think? He's like, I have no idea how they're going to interpret this shit, Bill. And you know what I mean? And it's true because it's like, oh, well, that does look like it. But then, well, now with the new rule, like soccer, I coached in Deerfield Beach, my buddy's kid, rec league. And, you know, I used to say, this one guy had an accent. I go, no, just because you have an accent, ref, doesn't mean you know the game. And it's like these guys would come out and they, I remember the old days when you do a throw-in in soccer, you'd have to be, you couldn't be on the line. Right. So here I am yelling one time in one of these games, like, he's got his foot on the field. And the guy throws the book at me after, he goes, you idiot. It's a new rule. As long as your feet, I don't know what the rule is now. As long as you got one of your heels on the other side of the line, it's ridiculous. They change certain rules. Right. But rules in soccer don't change as much as they do in football. Football, every year there's a new rule. Oh, we're going to kick it from the 45. We're going to kick it from the restrooms. You know, there's always something different to interpret. And of course, the basketball got in a lot of trouble. I remember when the Heat won in 2012 or 13, that one guy was caught. And because I remember when we played the Pistons one time at home, we were getting all the calls. And yeah,
we've talked about Tim Donaghy.
Yeah.
Yeah. His big moment actually occurred in the early 2000s. It was the Lakers and Sacramento series, which people are still salty about. That it, Sacramento lost the lead on their way to the NBA Finals, and a lot of people felt the dishonest and improper officiating led to that, and the Lakers went on to make the NBA Finals. And I forgot if they won or that was the year they lost to Detroit. But and then Donaghy admitted he fixed games, and he bet on games, and it appears that nobody else was involved in that. But that opens that the NBA is almost too transparent. They do this 2-minute officiating report. In the last 2 minutes, they will write a report on, and they will list every mistake they find when they review it. And I appreciate the honesty, but at the same time, if you put out, with a minute and 11 to go, that was a foul when everybody was yelling. And by the way, with 38 seconds to go, so-and-so stepped out of bounds. We didn't call that one. And we probably shouldn't have called a foul with 12 seconds. It almost is like if you owned a restaurant and said, hey, the burgers are terrible. Don't come in. Come in, but they suck. It's kind of the same thing. So I applaud them, but at the same time, it's like, geez, fellas, I don't know if you're helping your integrity with the fans.
Does the soccer like the VAR? The video replay. I mean, is it
No. We don't. Especially, you talked about, you don't see a lot of rule changes in soccer because it's very steeped in tradition and. I'm a little bit old school, so I don't particularly care for it. It still leaves debates every time a VAR decision is upheld or overruled, or like in the NFL, very similar to that. You still got human people that make eventually the decisions in slow-mo, which is also, and a standstill is different than the actual game itself. But to Dave's point, soccer is the opposite of transparent, there's scandals each and every week throughout the world of players, coaches, referees buying off games. That's unfortunately still part of the mantra. They've tried to cut that out. We know that some of the big timers, including FIFA bosses and people within our own confederation, former presidents, have gone to jail and started going to jail. Are still being tried to get extradited. They've taken millions and millions and millions of dollars to sway a World Cup one way or the other, or a game, or whatever it might be. So, unfortunately, soccer is just the most mysterious, inconsistent. On today's point, again, I remember the big players that came here in the late 70s, early 80s, and we're talking about Johan Cruyff, George Best, and Dave knows, from Nene Kubiak to Gerd Müller, that was the one thing that they used to go from game to game. We have no idea what call we're going to get. So inconsistent from half to half, from play to play. And it was really frustrating for those big-time players.
That's interesting. Yeah, because, by the way, my
and it still happens.
Yeah, but my favorite cheer to an umpire that's bad is, how do you sleep standing up, ref? That's always been my favorite.
I
would scream.
I like that.
That's better than the ones I used to get thrown out of during my kids' basketball games when they were growing up. That was a lot cleaner than the ones I used. Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, it's amazing. Is there anything worse, Thomas, in sports than the own goal?
Oof. No, there isn't.
There's
some drama. Look at the 94 World Cup. When the U.S. beats Colombia, Ernie Stewart scores the winner, but one of the two goals was an own goal by Escobar. Yep. We all know what happened to Escobar. He got executed by the cartel because they put billions on Colombia getting out of the group or even winning it because it was one of the favorites. They didn't even advance.
Right.
So when I coached Carlos Valderrama, he told me some incredible stories talking about the crazy side of the international game, things that happen in South America. It's just, you just shake your head and go, what? And the own goal is just, that's one extreme extent. The own goal for every player is embarrassing. You're already part of, you want to dig a hole, you want to disappear, you want to, you know.
It's very rare.
Just like you, Dougie, as a goalkeeper, at 1-1, you make a big mistake, you lose the game.
Yeah.
Similar feeling, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, nothing worse than, you know, an easy ball floating and you, it goes through your hands because it, you know, it's too easy to catch and it goes right or between your legs. You know, but like, it's very rare. Like in basketball, it's not like, it's very rare. It may have happened once or twice. Maybe. I don't know. You tell me, Dave, but if somebody throws a basketball in the wrong hoop, doesn't really happen.
It has happened, and there's video of it. But I mean, the only thing I can think of is if a golfer misses about a 6-inch putt and his pants fall down at the same time.
That's probably,
I mean, honest to God, Thomas's point is exactly right. And on the world stage, and there's a great 30 for 30 called the Two Escobars. I'm sure Thomas has seen it, and Dougie, you probably have too. Spectacular 30 for 30 on that. I can't think of either, especially when you get into an international stage like that one. Now, I can't think of anything.
Ray Hudson asked me that on one of the with Phil Schoen on one of their what is it like to bomb as a comedian? I said the only thing it'd be like is like scoring an own goal. When you think about soccer in high school, Coconut Creek High School were playing Killian in the sectionals after losing to them. In the state 4A finals, Coconut Creek against Killian, I was the goalie. I was a sophomore. Boy, did I find women after that year because it's starting goalie. And that one we lost in penalty kicks. I did save one of the kicks, Coach, which is all a goalie's supposed to do in a shootout. At least save one of them. And I did that, and that guy saved one, and one of our guys hit the pole. We lost. The next year, to go to state, we lose because Steve Rindu, yes, Steve, I'm calling you out, on a corner kick, went to clear it, and it hit his shin and went into the upper corner. We lost to Killian.
Oh,
Steve, please.
Two to one.
Do me a favor. Stevie. I'm still – look at Dougie. You're still suffering. That's not right, Steve.
I'm never going to forget it. I still remember watching it off his shin and into the upper corner of the near post. And then, of course, somebody tried to blame me because I didn't call for it. I'm like, I'm not going to call for it. My guy 6'3", is ready to clear the front post. Why am I going to call it? I'm not calling
it. Correct. No, it was not your fault. No, of course not.
No, it wasn't my fault.
Never is.
I talked something here about the professional wrestlers. Let's skip that. Let me go to a few quick stories, and then we're going to give you guys let you guys go. These are some sports stories I thought were fun and we can have some fun with. But a referee, yellow cards, caca. And then take selfie with the Brazilian legend.
Welcome to soccer.
Well,
that pretty much sums it up.
I believe it was a friendly, right? It was an exhibition.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so I think she just wanted a picture and stopped the match in order to do it and found no other creative way to do so. Couldn't wait till halftime, apparently.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and by the way, it is caca.
Exactly.
I can only think of the headlines, Dougie, you'd be capable of writing if Kaká has a bad game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, actually, when Orlando beat Toronto one time, it was in the paper, Toronto coach was like, we could do nothing against Orlando. Kaká all over the field. Kaká covered the entire field. I wrote to Orlando FC or Orlando United, whatever, Club of Orlando. I said, please change his number to number 2.
Awesome.
Kaka should not be number 10. He should be number 2. And if you hide, and go ahead and try to find a guy from France named Pepe, make him number 1.
There you go.
This was a great story. Outrage as a boat crossing halts cyclist on some straight, on a home straight. Like, can you imagine you're in a bicycle race, you're training for years, and there you are, and then you see the finish line in the distance, and all of a sudden the bridge goes up. Happens here in Florida all the time. You know, you're on your way to a restaurant, going to Houston's, going somewhere on the beach, and you're ready, and I think I'm going to make it on time, and all of a sudden you see those crossing lights come down, and the drawbridge is going up.
You know, they could have taken a run at it, but I guess they decided to play it safe. You know, that would have been great video if they had just gone ahead, screw it, and just tried to beat the bridge, and maybe then like dramatic A-team jump over the bridge. You just like that would have been incredible.
They need to
that would have been correct. You're right. I've attempted it with a car once. That didn't really go well.
TR,
and by the way, serious story, it was a Ferrari as well.
Oh.
With a Romanian player that played 2 years for the Strikers in 81-82. Alexander Zatmari was his name.
I remember him.
And he brought Ferraris in to sell them in the United States to make some extra money. And we're on Davie Boulevard.
Yeah.
And the lights go up. The bridge literally is going up. And he goes, okay, we do this. You know, he doesn't speak any English. He goes, what do you mean we do this? So he goes through the barrier. Seriously,
oh, no.
He goes over it. And it catches the two back wheels, but we all almost made it. So it takes one back heel up, and we're coming to a stop. Both, thank God, weren't injured, and no police ever put a report out, never went in a newspaper. But yeah, we wrecked the Ferrari, tried to jump the Davy Bridge.
You guys never watched Evel Knievel do the Snake River Canyon, did you? It didn't work out for him either.
The Snake River Canyon. He released a parachute way too soon. Now, this is great.
See, in the Netherlands, it's different because in the Netherlands, we have the 12-city ice skating tour. And you have to go underneath very, very little bridges. So when they're open, that's great. It's when they go down, actually, you come to a complete stop. So it's a reverse, you know, in the Netherlands.
Oh, they're different.
Most things, is different in Holland.
Well, I
because if you ain't Dutch, you ain't much.
I was waiting for that.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you. I had to get it in there.
I would definitely be pissed if I was on that race, but they couldn't make it. They were from Norway. Two of the ladies tour of Norway. Foursomes held the 30-second margin.
They ended up not getting into the top. They were the leaders by about 20 or 30 seconds. Everybody joined them. And the race organizer said, good luck. God. As soon as the bridge comes down, you're on your own. And the women who were there first didn't even get on the podium.
So this is almost like almost like a Goonie Golf version of bicycle racing. Like you run into the windmill.
You know,
it's the windmill. You couldn't drive the bike through the alligator's mouth. That's crazy.
And they were cute new Norwegian girls, too.
Yes.
Well, I think that goes
I don't know if it has anything to do with it, but
the bridge tender.
Tall, lanky, blonde hair, blue eyes.
Yeah, like Dougie used to look when he played soccer.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
Spitting image. And the bridge tender said, these girls are going to wait here for a little bit, and got his camera. U.S. amateur football team, I got this is one you guys can see. U.S. amateur football team, Washington Square FC, sponsored by porn site RedTube. We always wonder that.
Don't go there, Dave. Don't go there.
Come on, go there, Dave. Go there, Dave. American non-league side unveiled RedTube as its main sponsor last year, and have now.
What team is this? Red Square.
Oh, don't act like you don't know.
No, I was asking about the team's name. Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's Washington Square FC. Is that in New York?
All I know is I'd really like to see their pregame film. There you go.
I would like to break down that film too myself as a coach.
Yeah. Hey, can we get back to that other shot? Have become for first ever teams. I'm trying to see where it was. They even have
it does put a whole new life into the expression penalty shot in that league. Apparently, with that.
There you go. There's so much here. I'm going to save this one as a joke. Right? I mean, there's so much here. And they got RedTube to make it look like almost like Red Bull, you know, like the Red Bull. It was New York Red Bull.
So Bulls. Is it a football team or a soccer team? FC.
Soccer team.
Club?
Yeah, soccer team.
Soccer team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I like the jersey. I think I want to get the jersey. If you can get a soccer jersey that says RedTube.
Yeah. Do they need a coach?
They need a play-by-play guy.
Thomas is coming out. He's gonna be their coach now.
Squeezed that one through.
And one of the things Thomas used to always scream at us when we were on practice, he goes, You got to get stuck in.
There you go. I would be perfect for that job.
You go. New coach of the Red Tubes. Boxing bout stopped after fighter's phone falls out of his trunks mid-fight. Hold on, man. I'm getting a call. Hold on. I'm getting a text.
Oh, I think he should have got his butt whipped as punishment for that instead of the referee stopping the fight. Oh, who called him?
God. Marvin Jones.
Was it like a spam call?
Marvin Jones was clearly expecting a phone call from somebody important as he felt the need to carry it, his mobile ring into the ring with him. Marvin Jones somewhere decided to carry his phone with him. I mean, don't they check? Like, I've refereed ISK kickboxing. If I'm an ISK ref and you check the cup, you check the mouth, you know, you got, you know, so I guess you don't check for a phone.
Are you checking cups also on Red Tube?
Yes. That's a special, that's an actual genre of checking the cup. Checking the cup. Checking the cup videos.
Oh, God.
A rather bemused referee proceeded to pick the phone up and hand it back to him.
This gets better all the time.
I know. It is good.
Yeah, I mean, and that's it. I mean, yeah. Yeah, I don't know why you would do that. Football team still smiling after this is a soccer team. It's a women's soccer team with no men acting like women. Or vice versa. But a football team still smiling after losing 40-0. To local rivals.
Yeah. I don't know what it feels like, but I coached the worst team in the world, according to the FIFA rankings in 2012, which was American Samoa and also had the Fafafina. They have still the record in official World Cup qualifying, losing 32-0 against Australia. And that drew me initially to that job. I went, I can do better. I can do 20, maybe. I can only go up.
Did you have incentives built in your contract? If they scored less than 20, you got a bonus or something? Yeah, nice.
It wasn't a winning record. It was a don't get your ass beat record.
Right. Exactly. I'd love to have seen that contract.
Thomas is like, he said, it can't get any worse than this. You know, maybe if I got Dougie to play goalie. And his state.
What did you say, Dougie? 42-0 they lost?
40-0 defeat. RNAS Caldras Ladies, which was only able to field 8 players, were on the wrong end of the hammering.
Oh, come on. There's got to be a mercy rule there.
Yeah.
Well, I guess 8 you can play, right?
Ridiculous. Yeah, 8. That's the minimum. Correct.
By the way, if you lose 40-0, that's not a rivalry. Just for the record, okay? Rivalry is like the old Strikers Cosmos days, or the rivalry, Lakers-Celtics, things like that. Not this, I'm afraid.
To this day, though, you missed the mark, Dave, on that one. The best rivalry in soccer was the Strikers against the Rowdies.
Yeah, that's true. I still hate Rodney Marsh's guts, and I don't know what I'd say if I ever ran into him in a gutter in Tampa, wherever he may sleep.
Yeah,
I love you, Dave. I love you, Dave. Go get him.
And our last story, this is very interesting. Cyclist expertly urinates off the bike in mid-race. This guy is on the Tour de France, some sort of major bike race now. They see the guy shaking a little bit, and then he gets himself prepared. And the other bikers are on one side. He's on the side. He's peeing as he's in a bike race. Like, you know, I was just talking to one of my shows the other day is with comics, how sometimes you don't want to pull over, so you pee in a bottle. You know? I mean,
why pull over?
Yeah.
Dougie, let me tell you something. The Tour de France is one of the greatest sporting events in the world. And maybe, talk about greatest athletes, one of the most grueling events.
Easily.
My dad used to take us. We didn't have a lot of money. We used to camp in southern France 2 weeks of the year when he was off because he was a bricklayer. And we would follow the Tour de France for 3 days in the Alps or whatever. These guys were suffering like mofos, man. Unbelievable. And they would do anything, urine, whatever. I get it. That's not an exception, by the way. That's a little bit of the norm there. These guys were on the bikes for hours suffering. And there's no way that they want to give up a second in the final sprint to a top of a mountain of whatever degree incline it is. Insanity, these guys. But I've got a lot of respect for him, and more so for a guy that can bike, win, and urinate at the same time.
Yeah. So that's why it's a yellow jersey they present to the leader? Is that...
It just dawned on me. It took me 5 seconds. Sorry. Very good.
Yeah. I would hate to be. Imagine those people on the side trying to give them water as a guy.
Well, you've seen it on TV, I'm sure, where they have the helicopter following the pack.
The peloton. And,
well, yeah. What's going on with the Brazilian rider there? Well, I don't think you have a word for it.
Yeah.
Oh,
it looks like his bike has an oil leak. of some sort. I think it's very, like I said, because we've been in the car and, you got to have a Gatorade bottle if you're going to pee in the car. Let's be real. And I mean, it's not like you could pee into a Capri Sun, box.
Ooh.
That's a challenge.
That would also be a major insult, if you know what I mean.
Yes, if you actually can do it, you wouldn't brag about it. that's one challenge. Hey, by the way, did I tell you how I could pee into a Capri cup? No, I forgot. I didn't want to tell you about that. Anyway, guys, we apologize to all our fans that the video did not go through. Hey, no better than to experience a podcast than by listening to it as we could. So I want to thank my guest today, Mr. Thomas Rongen, Mr. TR, for joining us today, and of course Dave Lamont, two greats in sports. It's always great to have you guys on, and listen, anytime, fellas, you're welcome back here on the show when we got video, so we can see our great, our somewhat great looking faces.
Anytime, Dougie. It's always a pleasure. Particularly good to catch up with Thomas, who's one of my all time favorites. So thank you for having me.
Right back at both of you guys. I needed a good laugh, actually. It was brilliant. I'd love to do it again.
Absolutely, awesome. Fellas. Chris, back to you in the studio. And, we'll figure out what happened with the audio, with the video.